Did you guys hear that?
Yeah, was that an air horn?
Yeah, that was an air horn. I'm up on the listener league. So I'm going to go make that pick real quick.
Oh, I thought a train went by.
All aboard.
All aboard the Byron Buxton hype train. Reboarding.
No.
Bound for Nowheresville.
The Dynasty Guru presents Dynasty's Child.
We're not experts, we're gurus.
There's a difference.
With your host, Patrick Magnus.
What loser did you bring to us this week?
Featuring Keaton DeRocher.
Well, I did not know that.
And featuring...
Jake, I don't know how to say your last name.
It's Devereaux.
Devereaux?
Devereaux.
Devereaux.
There is no N in the name.
Produced by Adam Lawler.
Hey, you guys. Hey, everybody.
Start over.
Yep, why don't you try that one more time.
What's up, nerds? Welcome to Dynasty's Child, your flagship fantasy baseball podcast for the Dynasty Guru with a focus on Dynasty formats. I'm your host, Patrick Magnus, and I'm a writer at the Dynasty Guru. As always, I'm joined by my fellow baseball writers, Keaton DeRocher and Jake Devereaux. Gentlemen,
hi.
What's up?
It's early.
It is late. Early.
No, it's late, so, you guys.
Yeah. The sun rises in the east.
Daylight savings time means that we're only 12 hours apart now. We're that much closer.
You know, Patrick, I always feel like I'm at least 12 hours apart from you.
But our hearts are much closer.
Keaton, what are you planning on having for breakfast?
I've really been feeling some cereal. I don't know of which brand, but I don't have any in my apartment currently. So when we finish, I'm going to go to the store, get some cereal. So I'm taking recommendations. You can hit me up at the Spoken Keats and tell me which cereal I should buy.
Cocoa I like Puffs. Frosted Mini Wheats.
Frosted Mini Wheats are, that's, you know, probably an underrated cereal. Kind of flies under the radar. Not a lot of people saying they like Frosted Mini Wheats. I was more of a Cinnamon Toast Crunch guy. Cereal's actually a really expensive thing to buy here, so we don't buy it.
I got a shot once that tasted like Cinnamon Toast Crunch at a bar. It's pretty cool.
I think I've had that too. Shot. Yeah. Wow.
It was like, it was rum shotta and something else.
Yeah, I don't know if it was that one. I think it might have been Frangelico and some type of spicy, like a fireball or something. I don't know, but it could have been. I don't know. It was good.
Well, guys, that's something we share together now. Something we all have in common. It's taking a Cinnamon Toast Crunch shot. But definitely go get Cocoa Puffs, Keaton. That's my recommendation to you.
I'll probably get Reese's Puffs.
Mm, also a good choice. Strong choice.
Or you could get both and combine them.
Whoa. That's just too wild.
Don't get too crazy. Let's keep our cereal humble like we are. Today, we're going to go over spring training injuries and stats and jump in right into reliever rankings. Maintenance and reminders. Any questions for us, you can submit to us on Twitter at Dynasty's Child. That's at Dynasty's Child, or via email at dynastieschildpod@gmail.com. That's dynastieschildpod@gmail.com. And while you're at it, first is things first here, even though it's not first. I just want to say thanks to the person that went and gave us a new review. They said for us to put some milk on it, and they were very kind to us, gave us 5 stars. And I don't know that person's name because I'm not looking at the review, but I want to say thank you, stranger. And I encourage other strangers on the internet to please go and give us a nice review because you're enjoying this podcast right now.
You know, I did put some milk on it the other day. I bought some oatmeal and used milk, and it was very much better than using water.
Told you.
Yeah.
Boom.
So, it works. But I will not be having oatmeal today. I will be having eggs and corned beef hash.
Ah, you know, that's like one of I like Chinese breakfast, but man, nothing beats an American breakfast. I love American breakfast so much. Particularly a diner. Ugh. So yeah, I'm envious of you.
It's really good.
All right, moving into injuries. This one's really scary. Luis Severino's shoulder. Estimated time of coming back. that's a technical term. We're looking at May, perhaps. Given a pain-killing injection into his right shoulder, and now he can lift his arm over his head. So that sounds super promising. I'm super worried about this. Shoulder injuries are the devil, and pitchers are the devil. And you know, there's some good options that New York has to roll out there in his place, but yeesh.
Yeah, this one doesn't look great. I guess the positive we can take away is they don't expect him to be out, I guess, a ton. Looks like a month and a half to 2 months, which, given how everybody was reacting, it sounded like it was probably going to be Tej, be down for a while. But it seems like that's been avoided, or kind of any major shoulder, like, labrum issue. So that, I guess, is a small positive, but that sucks. Yeah, he's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this really, really changes drastically the outlook for the Yankees, too. Like,
yeah.
I mean, we can safely assume that a healthy Severino is like a 5-win pitcher. And as much as we like Domingo Germán and Luis Sessa and, you know, guys like that, they are not Sevy. And I think it makes things all the more sort of iffy with that team because Masahiro Tanaka, as Keats and I talked about last week on the pod, you know, his arm is always in question. Paxton never stays healthy for a full season. And J.A. Happ is almost 36 and a half years old. So, like, things could get dicey. Good thing they have that ridiculous bullpen, huh?
Yeah, I was just going to say that they've got the super, super bullpen.
Yeah. I'm disappointed to see one of the young studs in the game, even if he is a Yankee, go down with a shoulder injury. Just sucks. But, like, a guy that small throwing that hard, I can't say I'm totally shocked.
Yeah, but I mean, that was, you know, I always felt like his velocity flew under the radar. Like, people never really talked about the fact that he was throwing 99. It sucks. I mean, you're right. You know, you can't be surprised when somebody's throwing that hard, but still, it's just a bummer. All right. Miguel Sano, his heel. Something happened. He suffered a cut while celebrating his team winning the Dominican Winter League Championship back in January. Good Lord. Listen, Miguel Sano, are you listening? I want to talk to you for a minute, buddy. You really got to get it together. What are you? 26 now? It's really just time, dude. You're a mess. Look at yourself in the mirror. You're a goddamn mess. Get it together, Miguel Sano. That's it. We're not talking any more about him. We're moving on. Dude that guy needs a good wake up call. I hope he just got it.
Just think about the shit that you've done.
He is going to be back in May, it looks like, as well. Yeah, think about the shit you could be doing right now. God damn it. Alex Wood is another guy that can't stay healthy. He's guaranteed to give you, like, what, 140 innings? I wrote him up for the triple play last year, and he just has all sorts of issues. But apparently he's got... Did you guys hear that?
Yeah, was that an air horn?
Yeah, that was an air horn. I'm up on the listener league. So I'm going to go make that pick real quick.
Oh, I thought a train went by.
All aboard.
All aboard the Byron Buxton hype train. Reboarding.
No.
Bound for Nowheresville.
Ooh, good pick, Patrick. Good pick.
Thank you.
You son of a bitch.
Darwinson Hernandez. We're going to talk about him a little later. Where are we? Let's get back on track here.
Alex,
I was talking about injuries.
Back.
Yeah, Alex Wood is always hurt. If you have him, if you own him, you can't really be surprised.
You remember when, who was it? Was it Alex Wood, Mike Minor, and there was one other guy in Atlanta that was supposed to be like the next Smoltz, Clavin, Maddox, and Wood's always hurt, Mike Minor sucks, and the other guy is like never made it out of AAA.
Mike Minor's back to being good now.
Is he? He was pretty bad last year.
He's okay. I feel like he's overrated.
Mike Minor had an under 2.8 ERA in the second half last year.
Well, you got to play a whole season, Jake. Well, we'll see.
Mike Minor's a guy I'm drafting in lots of leagues.
That's going to bother me. All right.
I like him.
What's going to bother you?
That who was that third pitcher for the Braves?
Who am I?
Went like 10-2 in his rookie season, and then just like disappeared. Medlin, Chris Medlin.
Oh yeah, Chris Medlin. That one hurts.
For a bit.
Yeah, that does hurt.
I think Chris Medlin had 3 Tommy John surgeries.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I believe you're correct, Jake.
Yeah, it was the 2013 season. Alex Wood, Mike Minor, and Chris Medlin were supposed to be like the new dudes. And man, what a bummer.
All right, let's get back to this. Francisco Lindor and his calf issue are on the mend, apparently. Dr. Mike Tanner tweeted out that he's doing so. It was reported by RotoWire that Lindor is doing side-to-side mobility limited. I am not a doctor. So Dr. Mike Tanner says that this actually means he's progressing nicely and expects him to be on track for an early April return. And he's projecting 18 to 20 stolen bases from Lindor. So for those of you that drafted him when people were panicking and maybe got him in the second round of some drafts for redraft or even dynasty, good on you because things are looking good.
Yeah. We got him at number 15 in the great, and that feels like a fantastic value.
That's great.
Yeah.
Alex Bregman, we told you he was going to be back ASAP, and he's going to be back ASAP. Any worries? No. Correct?
He's dealing with a little bit of back soreness right now, and like that's always a little concerning, but no, I mean, it's Alex Bregman. He's awesome. So
yeah,
unless this like persists, I'm not too worried about it. It could just be he doesn't really want to play in very many spring training games, like anybody, like because no one wants to play in these games. I don't know if you saw the Sox outfielders mic'd up the other day, but Mookie was just like, yeah, I hope I'm out by the fourth. Like, I just don't want to be in here right now.
I did see that. It was
Jackie Bradley's response, but it's like, I'm going to be out before I even get in that bat.
Jorge Alfaro is dealing with a knee issue. Apparently, he bruised his right knee. Suffered last Saturday when he banged into a dugout railing whilst chasing a pop-up and continues to have inflammation. So that's a bit worrisome since he's a catcher. And then another concerning one is Kyle Seager. Greg Johns of MLB.com reports that Seager's left wrist was heavily taped on Saturday morning after he suffered an injury while diving for a ball in Friday's game. Got x-rays and it came back clean, but he's going to see a hand specialist. And wrist injuries for hitters are concerning. Not that Kyle Seager, I think I said Chris Seager earlier, but not
Kyle.
Okay, cool. Not that Kyle Seager is, someone we care too much about these days. Anything to say about those two injuries?
I think it dings Kyle Seager a little bit more, but he's already been going so late in all the drafts that I've seen that it might not affect him too much. In terms of Alfaro, he's someone that if he is at all hurt, I'm sure the Marlins are going to take it really slow with him because they obviously have nothing to play for. So I don't know. I don't think these are too huge, but I want to say we did miss an injury that I want to bring up that is maybe one of the more hilarious injuries that we've seen this spring, and that is our old favorite Joe Kelly hurt his back at a crawfish boil for 4 hours. He was apparently slaving over a crawfish boil and hurt his back somehow doing that.
That's so on brand for Joe Kelly.
Yeah, really. Yeah. He is, like, so eccentric. Like,
I mean, a crawfish boil sounds delightful, doesn't it? Like, it just does. A big old table full of some crawdads. Some of those mud bugs.
I mean, I'd eat that shit right up, but I'm not going to slave over it for 4 hours if I'm a professional pitcher and I can just not have to do that.
Hey, don't tell Joe Kelly what to do. I'm sure there were some beverages involved.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure he wasn't just standing there the whole time.
Yeah, I bet you he was having some Cinnamon Toast Crunch shots with those crawfish.
That sounds like a terrible combo.
Probably playing bags. Yeah, that does sound terrible.
All right, let's get into the spring training stuff. Bam, 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 bam. All right, we're going to talk about some spring training runs, things that guys that were buying their hot performances, guys that were not buying it at all, and maybe some surprise roster, some players that are going to be on rosters that we did not expect. So let's start with some hot spring training runs and things we're buying. Jake, why don't you kick us off here?
All right, I'm going to go with Michael Chavis, who over 10 games in spring training, 21 at-bats, has a whopping 4 home runs and 10 RBIs. He's batting .286 with a .348 OBP and an .857 slugging. That is good. .857 is very good. So I think what I'm buying about Chavis is just that, like, this guy can hit. And there were a lot of questions coming off of his PED suspension, whether or not, like, this guy was actually going to be valued like a top 100 guy. And what we saw this past offseason is he wasn't in almost anybody's top 100 except for MLB Pipeline, who had him, I think, 79th. But I've always been a believer in Chavis's hit tool, and there's the old adage, if you can hit, they'll find a place for you in the bigs. And Chavis is, you know, flexible. He can play first. He can play third. He can play second. So there's a lot of places where you can move him around. And I do think that this is the year that we're finally going to see Chavis break into the Red Sox in some role. So I'm buying it, and I think he's a really good bat.
I agree. I'm excited. I would love for him to make the roster out the gate, but that's probably a little aggressive. But who knows?
Yeah, I feel like we've been touting him forever. Back in the preseason of last year, we were talking about dreaming of him playing second base and having a power hitting second baseman for the Red Sox. So, yeah, can't wait to see what he can do. All right, Keaton, you're not talking about Chavis Bebe, but who are you going to talk about?
No, I'm talking about the Cowboy. Chris Paddock, man, is he having himself a spring. Woo! 8 2/3 innings pitched, 2 walks, 14 strikeouts.
Get it out!
2 earned runs. That's a 2.08 ERA. And yes, I know it's the spring, but his stuff has been ridiculous. And he has a legitimate chance at making the opening day roster because, one, he's really good. And two, the rest of the Padres pitching is really bad. So why not? If they feel like the moves if they feel like the moves that they've made in the offseason give them a chance to compete in the West, why not put your best pitchers out there? And honestly, it doesn't take much to beat the guys that are already there. But he has a legitimate shot at making the Major League roster right out from the get-go here, which would be tremendously exciting. But he's great, and I buy it. I'm buying it all over. I feel like we've all pretty much been bought into Paddock for quite some time now, but now it seems like we're not going to be too far away from seeing him throw some major league pitches, which is really exciting.
I'm going to take that a step further, Keats. The roster resource page already has him projected as the SP2 for this team heading into the season behind Joey Lucchese and ahead of Matt Strom. So I think this shit is going to happen. I think you're right.
Projection systems love him. Projection systems love him, too. Over at Fangraphs, you can check out like the Bat, ATC, and Steamer. All have him projected for almost 100 innings and about a K per nine. With an ERA that's close to like the mid threes. So yeah, I think we've got some reason to be really excited about this Cowboy. And for those of you that might not understand the Cowboy reference, he puts on a suit, correct? But he looks like a cowboy every day that he pitches.
Yeah. I think we've tweeted out the picture before. We may have to just do it again to remind people because he's awesome.
Agreed. And the spring performance that I'm buying is Tyler O'Neill. Every hit that he gets seems to be a home run. Yes, it's spring training. But the plate skills are going along with that as well. So he hasn't made a ton of contact other than the home runs, but his strikeout and walk ratio, so he's walked 6 times and struck out 7. So he's got an OBP of about 400 combined with, so he's got an OPS of 1.192. Yes, spring training, but I really think there's something to Tyler O'Neill. It's a crowded outfield in St. Louis, but I really think that there could be a breakout here if he can get a shot at everyday playing time somehow. Where that's going to come from, I'm not totally sure. Just because St. Louis is so loaded in the outfield with Bader, they're going to play Martinez out there somehow, they signed him to an extension, so I'm not sure, unless they're just trying to make him a more valuable trade piece. But I'm buying what Tyler O'Neill is selling. Dude is super jacked. Plate skills, yes, please.
You know he benched 425 in the offseason?
That's a shit ton of weight.
That's a lot of weight for a baseball player to bench press.
He's very strong. Wasn't his dad was a bodybuilder, correct?
Yeah, Canadian bodybuilder.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, surprised. I like me a strong boy. What do you know?
Jacked.
Strong, we all have boy our types, season. Patrick. I'm really shocked you had the self-control not to go with your boy Santana.
Yeah.
I just, you know,
11 OPS.
I kind of feel like I've played it to death. So I tried, he was my first pick, but I changed it because I didn't want to beat the drum anymore. But yeah, Domingo Santana I'm still good, spring training.
Yeah, he's relieved to get out of there. Good for him.
One last guy that we should probably touch on before we move on is Nico Hoerner. He's having himself quite the spring training. Jake, why don't you lay down the law on Nico Hoerner?
All right, so Nico Hoerner in spring training, he's only played 4 games so far, but the numbers that he has in those 4 games, 6 at-bats, are pretty good. He's got a home run, 3 RBIs, and an OPS of 2.722. Yes, that is correct. Just unbelievable numbers. But this guy has a really good feel to hit. People loved him in this past draft. Evaluators did because he is so advanced, and I think that he can make it to the show very quickly. And there is an outside possibility that Hoerner could break camp with the team. Looking at their roster, Javi Baez is the one who's currently entrenched at shortstop, but you could have him potentially play second base and have Ben Zobrist move around to the outfield or play in a more traditional super utility role like he's done in the past and move one of the other guys to the bench, minor leagues. Maybe that's Albert Almora, or whether that's David Bott, who has 2 options. Probably not Descalso because they went out and signed him, but he's a really valuable guy and probably somebody who could play in the majors already with how advanced the bat is. And he profiles as like a high average, high OBP 15-15 guy, maybe like 20-20 in his best season. So he's good. and someone who's interesting and could be the first one to the show.
Yeah, this is coming off a pretty strong AFL performance too, where he had an OBP of 400 in his only 12 at-bats, but two stolen bases. So, I mean, yeah, there's something here. This is pretty awesome. And for first-year player drafts, for people that grabbed him, you know, they might be seeing him a lot sooner than they thought. All right, moving on now to runs that we're not necessarily buying, performances that we think, I don't know if I can get into this. Keaton, you have an unfavorable one, one that I don't like to hear, but I want to hear why you think that this run isn't sustainable in JBJ. What's up?
Jackie Bradley Jr. should be the reigning, like, 18-time spring training MVP for the Red Sox. This is where he shines. This is where he gives everybody hope that he finally figured out how to hit, and he'll carry it over to the regular season, and then it never does. So it's that there's some renewed faith with JBJ because of word out of camp is that he worked pretty extensively with JD Martinez and made some tweaks to his swings, coming at it with a bit of a different approach. And it paid dividends. I believe the first two spring training games he played, he hit home runs. But until I see him actually reach his potential for an entire regular season and not just 1 or 2 months, I'm never going to believe anything he does in the spring, because he's done this far too often. He's had springs where he's hit 419, 378, 377. He's hit 4 homers, 3 homers, 2 homers. I mean, he's spectacular during the spring. You can't really count him out for having a poor spring, but it just never carries over. So I know that there's a lot of renewed faith and him believing that it's actually going to work this time because he's worked on making actual changes to his swing. But I'm never going to buy it until I finally see it. So it's temper your expectations with his impressive spring so far.
I'm on board with JBJ's breakout with him carrying this over.
And I think both of you guys are. I think I'm the odd man out on it.
Yeah, I think you are. He flashed some changes there towards the end of the season last year, and he actually finished with a exit velocity of almost 92 miles per hour, 91.8. So that gave him a hard hit rate of almost 50%. Now I know he struggles with making consistent contact, but his XBA was about 260, and he does have an above league average launch angle. Walk percent is not fantastic, but it's not terrible. K percent's not great, but not terrible either. I don't know. I think there's something there. I disagree with you, Keaton, and his where he's drafted right now has got to be not that high. Let's see where NFBC has him. Down at 223. So I think that's a perfectly good place to take a flyer on him. Jake, you're a believer as well.
I drafted him in our listener league. Yeah, I am. I've been drafting him in a lot of places. I do buy that he has really worked with JD Martinez to transition and work on his swing, and he has talked about it a lot. So we all know that the physical tools have been there. He flashed that in, I think it was 2016, when he had like 26 home runs. And he's always had good plate discipline. It's just been a matter of figuring out his swing and shaking these putrid stretches that he can get into. So, I don't know. I just think that I'm going to continue to be optimistic because he's going to get so much run because of the Gold Glove defense as well. So he's going to have ample opportunity to, you know, work this out over the next year or two. But I think we're going to see the best season from JBJ of his career this year.
Well, you heard it from us. Two analysts that know what they're talking about. One guy who just doesn't like JBJ. Next person that I want to talk about is Lewis Brinson. Now, this one makes me sad because I am actually a really big fan of Lewis Brinson. I did the write-up for him in the triple play last year, and I don't know. I did a lot of research on like his character as well. I watched some interviews and like talked like the way he talks about hitting and like just the effort that he puts into the game, and like came away like really rooting for him. But you know, he's hit 5 home runs in spring training so far, and that's great and everything, but the tools have never been the question. Like, we know that he's fast. We know that he can hit the ball hard. It's been a matter of plate discipline, and that's still not there so far. You know, granted, we're only looking at 26 at-bats here, but he struck out 8 of those 26 at-bats, and he's walked twice. So while he's making all this contact and he's hitting the ball out of the park and, like, it looks really good, things haven't changed yet, or at least it doesn't look to me like the strikeout issue is still there. And until that changes, like, I'm not going to buy into him being just like the next Joey Gallo or something. He's not. So until he starts walking on a more consistent basis, I just can't get down with it. I can't get into it. Anybody disagree with that?
I'm on board with you, Patrick. I support you.
Thanks.
I don't like him either.
I like him. I just don't like him.
You hate that guy.
He's really had his career derailed by injuries. He's had so many injuries, you know, and he was rushed developmentally. I just, I feel bad. Keaton, anything? Nothing out of you?
Nah, shines wore off for me. I think, I remember we were talking about him. I think at the same point last year, and we were kind of buying into it because he was traded to the Mets or Marlins, and their roster was terrible, so we knew he was going to get playing time, and I think we all were hoping he was going to do something with it, and then it turns out that he didn't.
Yeah, I haven't cashed all my chips out off him. Like, I still own a couple stocks of Lewis Brinson. I'm hoping that with consistent playing time that he can develop into a solid major leaguer, but I don't see it yet, despite these 5 home runs in spring training. Surprise, surprise. All right, and finally, Jake, who are you not buying?
I am not buying Lord Byron Buxton.
Club B's.
Yeah. Buxton is having a hot spring right now. I think I had the numbers in front of me, but they're gone now. But just believe me, it's good. His numbers are good. But I don't believe that Buxton can hit, simply because I've never seen any evidence of it other than at the minor leagues. Buxton had a -3 WRC plus last year over 28 games. And I know he was injured and stuff like that, but I just don't think you can draft this guy with the idea of counting on him. Like, if you drafted him as one of your starting outfielders, even in like a 24 team league, you are just asking for it right now. He just strikes out so much, and he doesn't walk enough, and he hasn't been able to, you know, do damage. I guess the one thing you can say for him is if he does start every game, he'll get some steals for you, but in OBP leagues, he ticks down as well. I think best case scenario is like a 15-30 guy with like a 300 OBP. And that is just not great. That would be like best possible outcome. I think more likely he continues to be a putrid player and just a giant bust.
Yeah, I am a long time, long, you know, as long as Buxton's career has been. But yeah, I've been on the same thing. I don't think he can hit. I just haven't seen it at the major league level. Although, you know, in the minors, it's so strange because in the minors, it seemed like he was a totally different hitter. So I don't know. Maybe it's there, but yeah, I'm with you. I'm not buying it either. Surprise to make the roster for spring training. Some guys that we thought, hey, you're not supposed to be ready yet, or you're not going to make this team. The dude I had picked was, I had Garrett Hampson winning this battle between for second base for the Rockies. So it's Garrett Hampson and Ryan McMahon. And Ryan McMahon has pretty much outperformed him. Now, if you were to just look at the slash lines, it doesn't look by too much because Hampson's batting 300 and McMahon's batting 433. So that's better. But like McMahon has 4 doubles where Hampson has 0. McMahon has a triple and Hampson doesn't have any. So all the contact that Hampson is making is weak. He has stolen one base. Nope, he's stolen five bases. Goodness gracious, Garrett Hampson, you're running all over the place. But I think that McMahon is going to win this job. And that surprises me because McMahon has been a pretty big disappointment since his arrival in Colorado. He was fairly well hyped and hasn't done much with the playing time that he's received. So that's my thing. I think that McMahon is going to win that second base job. And that surprised me. What surprised you, Keaton?
Victor Robles. He is having a very good spring. And he's kind of been running wild on whoever he's going up against here, spring training. There was one of my favorite sequences from him so far, the spring training. I think it was in like the second or third game. And he beat out an infield single, got moved over to second, then stole third, and scored on a pass ball. And was like all like the ball never left the infield the entire sequence. And he went all the way around and scored. He's electric, and he's going to be a bunch of fun. And it's probably aided by the fact that Harper's not there anymore, so there's essentially an outfield spot available. But just given his injuries and the service time, I didn't expect him to make the opening day roster, but I think he's played his way onto it. And Roster Resource also agrees that they haven't pegged in there as the number nine hitter, or well, the eight hitter ahead of the pitcher. But just the fact that the Nationals are going to have a roster with Trey Turner, Adam Eaton, and Victor Robles all together is pretty impressive, and that's going to be a bunch of fun to watch. You throw Soto in there, too. They're going to run all over the place. That's going to be a fun team.
Yeah, I don't really think they're going to miss Harper very much.
Yeah, a little bit, but, you know, because he is Bryce Harper, and I love Bryce Harper, and I'm going to miss him as a National. But yeah, that outfield is, to steal your term, Keaton, is electric. They're going to be exciting. All right. Jake, who's your surprise? Your roster surprise.
My guy is Francisco Mejia, who's having a great spring for the San Diego Padres. So far, he's played in 9 games. In those 9 games, he's got 3 home runs, 9 RBIs, batting .455. With a 1500 OPS. He's doing really, really well. We always knew that the bat was really the reason why you draft him. His catching defense is a little bit suspect, and, you know, I'm not really sure how he performs with his game calling abilities, but he's a player that even if he were to move off of catcher would be valuable enough with the bat, and he's super athletic as well, so he could play around different positions. But it does seem like with him hitting so well right now, and the only person ahead of him is defensive wizard Austin Hedges, that they could very well work him into some sort of split with Hedges very early, and maybe move him around the infield, because the only other guy that they have listed on their bench right now for an infielder is Greg Garcia on the bench, and he's really a nobody in terms of blocking Mejia, who could play third and probably could play elsewhere as well. So I think that they're going to find a place to get his bat in there, especially if they're making aggressive moves like putting Paddock in the rotation and possibly, you know, pushing up the timeline of some of their other pitching prospects. It seems like this is a team that could sneaky contend this year. And one of the best baseball guys, Jim Callis, over at Pipeline, always says the old adage that, you know, teams with great farms tend to overperform before you think they're going to be ready. And, you know, this is one of the best farm systems we've seen in maybe the last 20 years in terms of a team. So it wouldn't shock me at all to see this team push for 80, 85 wins. And I think if they do, I should say 85 to 88 wins. And if they do, I think that's going to be on the back of them pushing some of their young guys like Mejia.
Keaton, you, we thought you might end up at third base at one point. We were wrong. I think I'm going to win that bet that we made.
Yeah, and that's where I think, I don't remember what it was. Wasn't it, had to do with, like, plate appearances?
Yeah, so how many at-bats he was going to get, I believe.
I don't think you're going to win it. but, yeah, I thought that, I mean, obviously before Machado got there, I thought his path to glory was going to be at the corner there. But after Machado, I got bummed because I wanted to see Mejia there at opening day and play for a full season and finally get a chance that he hasn't gotten in his entire career, really, because he kept getting blocked by randos in Cleveland. But, yeah, he's having a great spring. He's hitting as we all kind of expected with his hit tool. And Jake, you might know a little bit better than me, but if memory serves, Mejia's defense isn't poor, but his carrying tool has always been his hitting. So it's not like if they end up platooning him with Hedges that they're going to be taking a major step back with the defense. It's just not quite as good, but a significant upgrade.
Yeah, it's not egregiously bad defense.
Yeah.
I think that Hedges is going to be a defensive replacement. That's what I think. Call him a shot.
I hope so. I want to see Mejia get a bunch of at-bats.
Yeah, it'd be sweet.
I want to lose that bet.
Yeah, I just don't think I'm going to. I want a Scherzer, so.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into relief pitchers. Oh, sorry.
Before we do that,
yeah,
we have a note here just across the wire. Vlad Jr., grade one oblique strain, and he's out 3 weeks.
Sure.
I believe that is that he's just shut down for 3 weeks. Oblique estimates 3 weeks to recover. Oh, yeah, so then he'll be back to baseball activities. That seems like a farce just to keep him in the minors. I don't believe it. I
refuse to believe it. He'll be healthy as soon as the Super 2 deadline passes.
Interesting. That's a bummer because it could be longer than 3 weeks. I mean, it will be longer than 3 weeks if it's actually an oblique strain. Because, like, if you said he's going to do baseball activities after 3 weeks,
yeah, it says 3 weeks to recover. So I'm reading that as, I guess we can try and get Dr. Mike's opinion on this a little bit later and tweet it out. But to me, that sounds like he's not going to be doing anything for 3 weeks, and then he'll be in 3 weeks. He'll start doing baseball activities again.
Yeah, trade him in all formats. Dump him.
Especially all the leagues that I'm in with you.
Yes, same. Do that. That's our advice. We're really just here to win our leagues. That's a bummer. I'm kind of bummed. But we got to move into relief pitchers, which is already a hard thing to do. So
yeah.
Let's do it.
If that didn't bum you out enough, let's talk about relief pitchers.
All right, so first two dudes I want to talk about are Kenley Jensen and Andrew Miller. Two dudes that have kind of had some health issues and are elite when they're on the field, but Jensen actually was not so elite. He's been dealing with some heart issues. He actually had heart surgery, I believe. And so with Miller, I'm concerned in the sense that last year he suffered a hamstring, right knee, and left shoulder injury. And pitching is a kinetic chain. So, like, it makes sense that he hurt all of those things. He's also, I think, 36 now. You know, he's an old man. I can't get down with these old men. So he missed. He even went on the 60-day DL last year. I'm concerned with Miller. You know, most projection systems have him for 60 innings this year, but I don't know if he's going to pitch 60 innings just based with his health. I'm a little worried. You know, the Cardinals are a great organization, and I think that they'll be gentle with him. I don't know if he's going to be back to his multi-inning self doing long relief. I think he might be used more one inning at a time. So I don't know. He'll be good when he's on the field, but I'm not all that confident about his health. And Kenley Jensen showed up with low velocity. Now, granted, it's spring training and everyone's got low velocity right now. But I'm just worried about him. I just feel like he's always got an issue lately. And, you know, relief pitchers have these, they burn out, man. You know, pitchers in general burn out, and relief pitchers are even worse. You know, Hodor, as Adam would say. Yeah, I don't know. I know that a lot of analysts are drafting him with confidence. I'm not one of them. I'm concerned about Jansen. I don't know if I'm
as concerned as you with Jansen. I think you bring up some really good points, but also like Jansen just has such pinpoint control when he is healthy, and you know, he dealt with so many different issues last year, and he looks really good this spring in terms of like physically. He has lost a bunch of weight, and I think that he's like made an effort to really work on his conditioning a little bit more too. So with a talent like Jansen, I think that even with reduced stuff, as long as he has control and he feels like things are working correctly, that he's someone who could succeed at a really high level. I don't know. I definitely don't think he's going to ever be vintage Jansen again, but I wouldn't be surprised if he had another top three, top five year this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the expectation. I'm staying away from him. I just am not drafting him. The price is too high for me for someone with the risk. But he did lose 25 pounds, which is a phenomenal feat. Unreal. Yeah. He lost 25 pounds in like 3 months. How the hell did he do that?
I think he had to.
Yeah.
I'm more concerned about his heart than his actual stuff. Being hospitalized at the end of last year with an irregular heartbeat and then needing a second surgery on it this offseason. I'm concerned for him and his heart more than I am his stuff, and hope that he can put a healthy season together and avoid any heart issues on the mound.
Well, those are my two dudes. Not the best of news from my end. I'm worried about both of them to some extent. With Miller, I think that he'll be effective and have quality innings when he's on the field. I just worry about how much he's going to be on the field. Let's see. Jake, who do you want to talk about for relief pitchers?
I will talk about 31-year-old lefty Aroldis Chapman and 32-year-old lefty Sean Doolittle. Let's talk about Chapman first. So I'm just going to quote a couple things right off the front of the FanGraphs page that aren't so great. Last year, he dealt with a knee injury, which dropped his velocity down. He averaged about 98 point something on his fastball last year, which is low for him. And he had his career worst hard hit rate of 34.5%. That is a negative, and he only pitched in 51.1 innings last year, 50.1 the year before, so his usage has been reduced the last couple seasons. The plus side is that Chapman, even with all that happening, had a 2.45 ERA and is completely locked into the closer spot there in New York. The negative side is that last year with the knee injury, his control was worse than ever. His walks per nine were 5.26, so that is a little bit alarming. However, if he is able to get his health in check this year, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see that velocity tick back up and for those walks to go down again to a more reasonable level in line with his career. That being said, though, Patrick mentioned relievers, when they start to blow up, they kind of start to blow up in a big way. I am anticipating Chapman being really good this year. So ultimately, I think that he could be a little bit of a value because of the year that he had last year. But you know what? I haven't seen really any discount for him in the years, the drafts that I've done this year. So I'm not sure. He's a guy I guess I'm really torn on. I think people are still drafting him like he's elite, but there's reason to believe he's both elite, but also someone who carries more risk than he ever has before. So I'm curious as to what you guys think about Chapman before we talk about Doolittle here, because I can't really decide what to make of him.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think it's he's not going to have a real long leash to keep things in check because of how good that bullpen is. They have about four other options that would be, you know, elite closer options on any other team if they had the job. And it seems like maybe part of that plan was just insurance to make sure that if things started to go more south with Chapman, then they had someone that they can kind of keep that 7, 8, 9 on lock. But that's, it's concerning. And the way that he finished last season, there was a lot of walks and a lot of games he wasn't able to, that games that he usually would end, wasn't able to get it done. It seemed uncharacteristic of him. So he's not going to have a real long leash to right the ship here as we get going. So if he's not there and his velocity doesn't kind of take a turnaround here, then someone else is going to be closer for the Yankees pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm worried as well. That 5.26 walk rate last year. I mean, I was at a game last year at Fenway where he walked. He blew the save by just like walking people, like walking the bases full, and just like it was a walk off walk. I'm concerned as well with Chapman, and like Keaton said, that bullpen is loaded, so they won't be afraid to move on if they need to.
Yeah. He's also terrible against the Red Sox though, so that's like been a thing for him. The other guy I wanted to talk about is Sean Doolittle, whose talent I absolutely love. Sean Doolittle is 32 years old. He throws his fastball a ton, but his fastball has ridiculous spin on it, so it doesn't matter that he throws it nearly 90% of the time. He's awesome. The problem with Doolittle is that his innings pitch totals the last few years have been 13.2 in 2015, 39 in 2016, 51 in 2017, and 45 in 2018. That means the last time he pitched over 60 innings was 2014. That being said, last year in 45 innings, he had a 1.6 ERA and walked like almost no one. The guy has elite control. He's really, really good when he's healthy and when he's on. And like I hope that he is healthy. The thing is that we just don't know. And you can't bank on health with this guy. He is being drafted towards the tail end of what I would consider really talented relievers. I was able to get him in the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational pretty late. But there have been all these rumors swirling around about Kimbrel signing with the Nationals too. So if that happens, it's going to crater his value in traditional saves leagues. But talent wise, if he can stay healthy, I think he is a top 3 or 4 reliever in all of baseball. I just don't think you can bank on that, but I would 100% be drafting him in almost any league I played in with the off chance that he can stay healthy and give you just elite numbers at a much more reduced cost than a guy like Chapman. And at this point, I'm not sure that there is that much more risk with Doolittle than there is with Chapman, especially when you weigh in the fact that you're going to be able to get Doolittle like 6, 7 rounds later. I don't know, maybe not that many, but like 5 rounds later.
Yeah, that's a solid point. I mean, the discount in rounds really equals out the value to where Doolittle could be really worth taking, puts him on par with Chapman, I think. Because I think you're right. The risk isn't really all that much different.
On those guys?
We can.
It would be interesting to see. I'm gonna try and look that up while you guys talk. Oh, okay. So it's actually not as much of a reduced value as I thought. Chapman's being drafted on average at 79 and Sean Doolittle at 107. So it's not quite the discrepancy. It's like 2 rounds.
One quick update on Doolittle, though. As of last night, the Nationals and Braves are both apparently out on Kimbrel, so it doesn't look like that's going to be something that stands in his way.
Where are we again? Okay, Keaton DeRocher. Keaton, you have 2 relievers that you would like to speak about?
I sure do. Since Jake took the olds, I'll take the youngs. First guy I want to talk about is Jose Leclerc. Oh, God, I just pulled a Patrick. Damn it.
Somebody's got a case really of the Patricks.
I don't feel great about that. He's a very, very good reliever, though, and he is not a closer in Texas. The biggest thing standing in his way of saves is that he plays for Texas, and they're not very good. So save opportunities may not be there. Strong improvement last year in both the strikeouts and walks with him. He upped his K per nine over 13, and if you can believe it, cut his walk rate in half to 3.9. That's right. 3.9 was half of his walks per nine in 2017. So he put up, albeit a very, very small sample size in 2016, back-to-back seasons of walk rate over 7, which is way too high, but was able to rein that in, got a whole bunch more strikeouts, and now he is poised to rack up all the save chances that the Rangers can give him. So he's a guy that I think isn't really mentioned with some of the other hot young closers or guys that, you know, the stereotypical elite top whatever five guys that we know and rely on. But you should know about him, and you should want him to get you saves.
Nice job. Really wrapped up the... Really killed it there at the end.
The other guy I want to talk about is Jordan Hicks, who should be closing for St. Louis. And he throws the ball just stupid hard, has a bunch of movement on it. There's really no reason that he shouldn't be the closer. His control, as you would expect with someone who throws 105 miles an hour, is a little sporadic. But when you throw 105 miles an hour, that tends to not really matter as much. So that's something that could limit him with his save opportunities. And healthy Andrew Miller, which apparently the Cardinals want to use as and not in the Andrew Miller role, and maybe use him as a closer, which doesn't make sense to me. And I hope that that doesn't actually happen and Hicks gets all the saves he deserves, because he is a bunch of fun to watch pitch, and I want him to be closing and watch him a lot.
That was I didn't know that they were planning on using Miller in the closer role. I think actually that makes a lot of sense given his injuries recently and probably needing to limit his usage. But yeah. But you're right. I mean, I would prefer to see Hicks in that role. He's got lights out stuff.
Hicks has had a really, really good spring, so that may kind of tip the Cardinals' hand to using Hicks, but initially when they signed Andrew Miller, it was with the intent of ramping Hicks up to be the future closer, but not now, and use Miller. But Hicks has had just a really great spring, so hopefully that ends up being the case. But so before we finish with relief pitchers, though, like we did with the other positions, we should probably rattle off the top 10, just so you guys know who our top 10 relief pitchers are.
I suppose that's something we should do.
Yeah. Number two is Roberto Osuna. Number three is Craig Kimbrell. Four is Felipe Rivero. Five is Corey Knebel. Six, Aroldis Chapman. Seven, Raisel Iglesias. Number eight, Edwin Diaz. Number nine, Ken Giles. Number 10, Cody Allen. And you can check out 11 through 75 on the Dynasty Guru's website.
Nice job on your pronunciation there.
I don't think those are right.
What do you mean?
I'm looking at it right now. We have Diaz, Osuna, Hader, Trinan, Kimbrell, Jansen, Chapman, Vasquez, Raisel Iglesias, Sean Doolittle.
Ah, God damn it, Adam. He gave us the top 10 from 2018.
Sorry.
Some producer man.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Wait a minute. Did I actually put the top 10 in there? Because I don't think I did.
No, you linked to the relief pitcher article from 2018. So I clicked your link.
Well, you clearly need to click the consensus rankings link. That's on you. That's your fault.
Why would you have...
That's irrelevant right now. All right, we can discuss that later.
I don't think that...
All right, well, sorry, I fail.
Well, there you go. We gave you our 2018 top 10 and our 2019 top 10 so you can compare and tell Adam he's a terrible producer on Twitter at the StatCast era. Thanks.
But also, like the other positions, we should probably throw out a few names that are sort of under the radar that we're interested in. Mine, obviously, from my live draft pick on the show today, is Darwinzen Hernandez, who has been he's been brought along as a starter, but he's quite wild. His stuff looks like it's going to play up more in the pen, and I think he's going to have a role with the Sox in the bullpen this year. His fastball is just nasty. I mean, he's throwing, I think, 96 from the left-handed side. Like, wow. I saw him for the first time over the weekend, and I was just blown away. He looked like he does have control issues. You can see it. He's not the first lefty to come along from the Sox minor leagues with control issues. John Lester had him when he came up. E-Rod has them. But he looks like he can be lights out. He's got three pitches, I believe fastball, a changeup, and I think it's a curve. Might be slider. He's got a wrinkle. I'm in love with him. I think he can be a top 30 a reliever. That's how high I am on him. I think he's just going to be lights out amazing, and I think he needs to be owned in redraft and dynasty. Jake, I was going to say, you're a Red Sox guy. What are your thoughts on Darwinzen?
Oh, good. Darwinzen has just filthy stuff. Like, the way that his stuff has been described is like true closer, like back end top 20 reliever in the game type stuff. And that's like if he doesn't become a starter. And he certainly has looked the part of a starter even this spring. So, you know, he's either going to be like a mid-rotation guy with some high K upside, or he's going to be a filthy back-of-the-pen guy. Either way, he is ownable in all Dynasty Leagues and should be owned. So go get him, because even if he doesn't work out as a starter, he's going to be super, really, super valuable.
All right. Jake, since we got you talking, why don't you tell us somebody who's a bit under the radar that we should be looking at?
All right, here's a flyer for you. A little guy by the name of Melvin Adon for the San Francisco Giants. Last I saw, he was in Double A. He's still been kind of used as a starting pitcher. However, he doesn't have the best secondaries, but he has a true 70-grade fastball. And a lot of analysts and draft guys, or prospect guys, I should say, think that he is going to be a fit for the back end of the bullpen eventually. He does have some control issues, but I think that he's a name that's almost going to be universally available unless you're in the, you know, deepest of leagues. And I think that anytime you have a guy with a 70 fastball, that's potential back end stuff. So I really like him for that reason. He's, you know, advanced. He's in the high minors right now, so he shouldn't have that much of a wait time. And I just like him. So check him out.
All right. And Keaton, what do you got? Who you got?
I got Ian Hamilton, the White Sox. He's been brought up through the minors as a closer, racked up 22 saves for the Charlotte Knights last season. He gets a lot of strikeouts, as you would hope from a reliever, but he also doesn't walk very many batters at all, which is impressive. He did debut with the White Sox last year. He threw like 8 innings in September, so that's not a real big sample size there, so I'm not going to pay attention really to what's going on there. But everything else that he's done in the minors has been pretty impressive, and because the White Sox have been bringing him along as a closer leads me to believe that they think he can be a closer. So there's obviously a couple guys blocking his path currently, but if memory serves, and I'm not even going to fact check myself on this, I think they're both up after 1 year. So we could be looking at Hamilton as the opening 2020 as the White Sox closer. And that he's a guy that I don't think a lot of people have been talking a lot about. So that may be someone to put on your radar. Keep a little look-see out. See how he does.
All right. And that does it for relief pitchers. We made it, everybody. Woo! Got through relief pitchers. Unfortunately, we don't have time for listener questions today, but maybe we can try to get back to them on Twitter. We'll get back to you guys on Twitter instead of reading your questions on the air, or we'll save them for next time. One of the two. We'll see what happens. But let's close this puppy out. Let's get out of here.
I think we can go through them rapid fire.
You want to go through them rapid fire?
I do. Unless somebody has like a hard out that they need to go do something.
Well, I got to go to sleep, but let's do it.
Too late. All right, Shelly asks us, which third base, Brian Hayes or Austin Riley? I am fully in the camp of Hayes.
Same.
Hayes for me. The defense is so good, too.
Is Mejia ever going to be a catcher? This is from Jim.
Yes.
It seems like that's his only path to playing time right now, so that seems good. Is Kyle Lewis recovering any of his prospect value? Not a lot.
Enough to make him valuable again, kind of.
Next. Enough for you to ask the question.
Yeah.
Cam asks us, how do you feel about these guys for 2019? Skaggs, Musgrove, Glasnow, Stripling, and McHugh. I really like Skaggs, Glasnow, and McHugh.
I love McHugh. I think McHugh is a sleeper. I think he's awesome. Love Musgrove. Love Stripling.
I love Skaggs.
Nice. All right. Fantasy Stock Watch asks us, by one starting pitcher, overall innings for this year, Lizardo, Whitley, Paddock. I'm going to say Paddock because he's probably the only one that's going to make an opening day roster.
Yep, Paddock.
Yep.
Brett asks us Hampton or McMahon, which we McMahon. Already answered. McMahon. And Evan asks us, who are some prospects in the Dynasty community that seemingly soured on, but we still believe in?
Halen Ortiz. Yalen Ortiz? One of those two.
Kevin Maitin.
Shit, I don't know, man.
All right, good enough. Wrap it up.
This has been Dynasty's Child, part of the Dynasty Guru website. I've been your host, Patrick Magnus. You can find us all over at the Dynasty Guru, where Keaton has wrote about... What did you write about? You just had an article come out.
I did. The latest installment of Keaton Real came out. It was my all-breakout squad.
That's right. Keaton, where else can we find you?
You can find me climbing the tops of the largest mountains Chicago has to offer. You can find me walking the streets and helping people shovel out their cars with the snow and then taking their parking spot that they have just left empty. And you can find me taking in a nice hot apple cider by the fire with little one.
Fantastic. Good stuff, Keaton, as usual. Jake, you've got some news. Why don't you plug yourself here? Plug yourself here at the end of the podcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Jake, plug yourself.
I will plug myself here. All right, so I have some big announcements, actually. Couple things. These two gentlemen, Patrick and... can I give this one, too?
Yeah, sure. Please.
All right. Patrick and Keaton are going to be joining me over at SB Nation on the Red Seat podcast, talking about the Red Sox for this upcoming season. So if you like all three of us together, you know, you should come on and listen to that podcast about the Red Sox. Also, in other personal news, I am going to be doing a daily Red Sox podcast for the Locked On Podcast Network called Locked On Red Sox. And that is going to be launching March 25th. So if you are a Red Sox fan or just a baseball fan in general, I want you to tune in over at Locked On, because whatever team you're a fan of, we're relaunching all of the MLB podcasts over there. So if you're a Braves fan or a Cubs fan or whatever, you can get a daily podcast for your team and get updates on that. So I'll be doing daily Red Sox podcasts that come out Monday through Friday. They're about 20 minutes in length, so it's going to be great for your drive commute. So definitely go check that out. It's going to be awesome.
Boom. Lots of big news that we saved right for the end of the podcast. Yes,
what, Keaton? If I am a fan of the Sydney Blue Sox, are we going to have some Australian Baseball League pods going on?
We could.
I could do those. All right. Well, Sydney Blue Sox and all, we're going to get out of here. That's going to do it. Oh, also, you can tweet at our bad producer, Adam, at the StatCast Era. That's right. You can tweet him about whatever your heart desires at the StatCast Era. I suppose you could follow him too. All right. Now that's going to do it. Have an awesome day. And as always, be the best bird dog you can be.